2FM.
Well, a big thank you, as always, to the two Johnnies for plenty of entertainment this afternoon. It is Friday, April 14th. I'm Shane Dawson, and you are listening to Game On. Coming up this evening, Jane Mangan has all the latest racing news, and we'll cast her eye over tomorrow's runners and riders and the Grand National. Ulster says go. Brendan Devaney will be chatting championship football with two Ulster quarterfinals down for a decision. Alan Cawley and Fergal Brennan look forward to two big Dublin derbies and plenty more besides in association football. All that plus team news from Leinster, Munster and Connacht makes up the show. As always, if you want to get in touch, drop us a text 51552 or tweet us at GameOn2FM.
GameOn2FM.
Yes, hello there, good evening. It's great to have your company on this Friday evening. Big weekend of sport to look forward to. Alan Cawley is standing across me. Alan, before we chat soccer, and you'll be chipping in on horse racing as well, just a bit of rugby team news to rattle through first off. And starting with Leinster. Ireland under 20 star Sam Prendergast will make his Leinster debut after being handed the out half jersey for the URC clash in South Africa against the Lions tomorrow afternoon. Leo Cullen has sent a largely inexperienced side to South Africa with top spot in the table already secured. Chris Cosgrave starts at fullback. On the wings, Dave Kearney is set to make his 150th league appearance. No doubt Joe Boyden will be delighted with that. While there is a welcome return for Tommy O'Brien, who makes his first appearance of the season after recovering from a knee injury. In the centre, Liam Turner is joined by Ben Brownlee, with Dick McCarthy partnering Prendergast at scrum half. In the front row, Georgia international Vaka Abaladze is set for his first Leinster start. He will pack down with Michael Milne and Lee Barron. Brian Deeney joins South African international Jason Jenkins in the second row, with Ruddock, who captains a side, Will Connors and Max Deegan forming the back row. On the bench, five academy players are set to feature, with Alex Soroka, James Killane, Ben Murphy, Charlie Tector and Rob Russell all looking to impress. Meanwhile, Ireland out half Joey Carberry has been left out of the Munster squad for their encounter with the Stormers tomorrow evening. Jack Crowley starts at 10 with Ben Healy named on the bench. Loosehead prop Jeremy Lockman has recovered from a thigh injury and makes his first appearance since December in an all-changed front row. Hooker Dermot Barron and tight head prop Stephen Archer also come into the pack, along with flanker Alex Kendellan. There's one change to the back line as Conor Murray starts at scrum half. Orgy Snyman makes his second start in a row and his first URC start since his Munster debut way back in August 2020. Mike Haley starts at full back with Calvin Nash, who made his 50th appearance last time out, and Shane Daly on either flank. Maliki Fekitoa and Anton Friesch continue their centre partnership. Peter Romani will captain the side. Keith Earls is in line for his 199th Munster appearance and his first since the win in Ulster on New Year's Day after recovering from a calf injury. He starts on the bench. Finally, Connacht welcome back six players from injury for tomorrow's crucial clash with Cardiff at the Sports Ground. Captain Jack Carty, international Finlay Beelam, Dennis Buckley, Jared Butler, Josh Murphy and Dermot Kilgallen have all overcome injuries to come straight into the starting 15. The seventh change from the side that lost to Benetton is the inclusion of Dylan Tierney-Martin, with Owen the Butler named among the replacements. Just time for a little plug. You can watch Lions v Leinster tomorrow 3 p.m, Stormers v Munster tomorrow 5:15, and Connacht v Cardiff Saturday 25-8, all on RT2 and the RTE player. And you can follow live scores on the RT Sport website, the RT News app, and follow a live blog of Italy v Ireland in the Women's Six Nations tomorrow. That one kicks off at 4:45 on RTE.ie/sport and the RT News app as well, or listen to live commentary in Saturday Sport or RTE Radio 1. Sinead for rugby. Time to take a breather. Alan Cawley, before we get into soccer after the break, before we even chat to Jane on horse racing, the snooker is beginning, and I know you're a big snooker fan, as I get my notes. Ronnie O'Sullivan's quest for an 8 World Championship title begins tomorrow against Chinese debutante Pang Junhui at Sheffield's Crucible Theatre. The Rocket goes into the tournament as the favourite to move clear of Stephen Hendry, with the most titles in the modern era, despite failing to reach a ranking final this season. In many ways, it certainly has been a curious campaign, with some of the biggest names in the sport misfiring, while others who have traditionally been further down the world rankings have thrived. Judd Trump set aside indifferent results to win the Masters in January, while Mark Allen started the season in stellar form and took the UK Championship. There have also been ranking titles for Gary Wilson, Robert Milkins, Ali Carter and Ryan Day, while the 2005 world champion Sean Murphy and four-time winner Mark Selby appear to have rediscovered their best form. So, Alan, who is ready to perform in the cauldron of the Crucible?
Shane, it's like Christmas Eve for me, Shane. And people, well, long-time listeners of the show will know that. I absolutely love the snooker, my first love. And I've been lucky enough to go to the Crucible four or five times. I don't know if we've had this chat, Shane, but it's the best sporting event I've ever been at.
Oh,
No, there's we have
one.
Not.
There is one.
It's why is that?
It's absolutely incredible. It's just a complete different atmosphere to a football match, which is obviously what I'd be more associated with. But it's so kind of intimate. It's so small, the Crucible. It only, I think the capacity is something like 900 people in the arena. When you bring down the partition, obviously it's split in half. Mm. So obviously 450 people, whatever the case may be. And you can literally hear a pin drop. You're so close to the players that you could just, without even raising your voice, Shane, you could say, Ronnie, I wouldn't go for that one. I think you're going to miss it. And he could actually answer you back.
Yeah.
It's just amazing.
And no better man to answer you back about what.
It is just incredible tournament. Incredible skill sets, those players, when you see them live as well. And it's a magical place, the Crucible. And obviously for the next 2 weeks, we'll be glued to it. Kicking off tomorrow, Ronnie, as you say, the defending champion, going for his eighth world title, which would break the record. He's sitting on seven with Stephen Hendry at the moment. And I don't think he'll get the eighth.
Okay.
Yeah, he hasn't been playing well enough. He hasn't been playing enough this season. It's something similar to Tiger Woods in the sense he just hasn't played enough snooker.
Yeah, but is he not one of these that, you know, feck training, who cares, just pulls it out of the bag kind
of
thing?
Absolutely, because he went a year where he didn't play for a year and rocked up to the World Championship and won it. So 100% he's capable of doing that, Shane, and obviously the greatest player we've ever seen. And the skill level is just off the charts. So he is capable, but I just think the standard around him is too good to be not playing enough snooker to just rock up and try and beat these boys, because there's talent all over. Something like what you see with the golf now, there's no one really dominating now. Every tournament you can go into, obviously there's five or six that can win it, and it's spread around amongst all the top players. And I think it'll be something similar in this tournament. I fancy Mark Allen. Okay. He had a really good strong start to the season, tailed off a little bit in the last kind of couple of months, but I think he'll be well prepared for this and ready to go. Sean Murphy, you mentioned in the intro there as well, has kind of recaptured some of his old form. He'd probably be a bit of a dark horse. But yeah, I think it's wide open, and I'm so looking forward to it.
I'd love to get over to the Crucible. Lords and the cricket, Crucible and the snooker are two like venues I really want to
go. I was fortunate enough, obviously I lived in Sheffield and that's when I went the first time, but since I've moved home I've been over five or six times as well, and it's just, it's spectacular. It's absolutely,
I love your excitement.
I love it, Shane, honestly. It's some place I'd love to be going again. We're actually, what we've decided this year, we're not going to go this year, but we're hoping to go to the tournament in York in December.
Okay.
Because that's one of the majors as well. There's three majors in snooker and two around Christmas, the UK Championship and the Masters. So I'm hoping to get to that in December.
Okay, good stuff. Okay, plenty to get through this evening. Jane Mangan is on the line because there is a small matter of the Grand National. Jane, Alan mentioned it's like Christmas Eve for himself, looking forward to the Crucible tomorrow. Is it like Christmas Eve for yourself in a way as well, looking forward to the Grand National?
Well, I suppose I don't want to cheapen Christmas Eve, because that really is the day before Cheltenham, but the Grand National is special, and I just know that Alan has encapsulated into his Crucible excitement that little bit of Aintree. And even watching it yesterday and today, seeing Davy Russell back riding a Grade 1 winner on Jerry Colum today, Aintree has something special about it, and that is before you even get to the Evergreens, the 4.25 miles, the 40 runners, and the Grand National Test itself.
Absolutely. Well, you mentioned Davy had a big winner today, I suppose. Talk us through that and your other highlights from today, because it isn't just about the Grand National. There has been 2 days of racing at Aintree, as you alluded to there, Jen.
There has, yeah. Look, 2 7 race cards, and the Irish have had 3 winners on the Thursday, 3 winners today. We mentioned Davy. He was facile and effortless on Jerry Colum, but it was the simplicity of the ride that we will miss when he retires tomorrow. You know, his last ride will be on Galvin in the National. But I was pleased for him, having had such a frustrating Cheltenham. It would have been an unsatisfactory way for him to end his career, doing going out on such a low note. So today was him at his best on a chaser, something that he was hot favourite. There was a bit of pressure involved, and he made it look like he was at home. So that was Jerry Colum today. And of course, Rachel Blackmore and Henry de Bromhead combining for In the Pocket in the colours of JP McManus. The Manila Times combination getting a Grade 1 success with him after he ran so well in the Supreme at Cheltenham. Maybe this wasn't as strong a race, but he had to be gutsy, and that was a very good performance as well. So that kind of carries the momentum into tomorrow. Of course, Rachel and Henry had a winner yesterday over Fences with Dancing on My Own, and they now saddle and ride the anti-post favourite for the Aintree Grand National. Ain't That a Shame has been hammered in the market, from opening at around 20 to 1 at declarations yesterday, now currently 8 to 1 favourite. I suspect it may well be that the horse has a great chance. He's got a lot of the right credentials. But I have a funny feeling that the Blackmore fan club, they're almost like the Swifties in terms of music. They have got behind their woman and she's now top of the betting.
And you, well, you, I if she's at like the Swifties, I wouldn't want to annoy any Blackmore fans, Ed, because they're fierce on social media. I tell you that. What has like? I mean,
what's a Swifty? Taylor Swift.
Taylor Swift.
Sorry, what's sorry, a Swifty?
Sorry,
Jade. Alan Cawley, get
there for
off
a second.
The radio.
Come on, Jade.
What?
Sorry.
No. And you've kids.
I was thinking there for a second. What? And then obviously I put two and two together.
There's in, and I'm allowed to say it because I'm a Shelburne fan. There's the Taylor Swift fans. There's League of Ireland fans, and I say there's a couple of other groups. Maybe American Republicans. They're the three people you don't want to annoy.
Well, that's
social
why
media.
I've never engaged with any of those people. Shit, so maybe that's why I don't know who
you've
they are.
You've got in plenty of rails with League of Ireland fans. On a serious note, Jane, what is the story? So you mentioned there, I think Ain't That a Shame is evens now to go off as favourite, basically. Like, what has caused this? Well, obviously, the lowering of odds is caused by people sticking a few quid on it, but has it been a case of just because she's won a couple of races now, or it is just devotees of Rachel Blackmore fans?
I think the Angie Grand National is one of those races where the casual punter, whether they only have one bet a year and that's the only race, or they just tune in for maybe the festivals, they definitely look for her name. But this horse has a great chance. He beat a horse called Max Charm at Goren last time. That horse has subsequently won. He's run a very good race in the Paddy Power, which we know is a good test for this race. And he ran a good race in the Munster National at Limerick. So he has a very good chance, but this is a very good race. Second favourite is currently Del to Work, the horse that beat Galvin, who'll also line up for Davy Russell in the cross country at Cheltenham. He was third in the race last year. A huge ride for Keith Donoghue, of course, the man who will be forever remembered as being associated with Tiger Roll. The next is Cork Rambler for Lucinda Russell, who was so desperately denied with Ahoy Senor yesterday. The Irish have a very strong representation in the race this year. They have 26 of the 40 runners, which numerically reads very strong. But when you look at horses like last year's winner, Noble Yates, he's up £19. It's a huge ask. Could he bring back back-to-back races? Well, of course he could. He's still only an 8 year old after running fourth in the Cheltenham Gold Cup. Guyard de Menil, fresh from winning the National Hunt Chase at Cheltenham, still a novice, the mount of Paul Townend, who won last week's Irish Grand National, Mr. Incredible for Willie Mullins. Second in the race last year, and he's second now, third to Manila Times 2 years ago. Mark Walsh and Ted Walsh teaming up there. And then you take in horses like Longhouse Poet, who I think has a great chance. He was sixth in the race last year after racing too exuberantly. If he can relax for the man who trained number six Valverde to win the race for Martin Brazel, I think Longhouse Poet has a serious chance as well. So it is one of those major, it is a bit of a lottery, but there are a lot of horses in here with the right credentials to make it happen.
You mentioned Davy Russell there, obviously rode a winner, and it is his last race, and it is his final retirement tomorrow. What are the chances of another fairy tale farewell?
Well, to put it simply, Shane, it's a 22-1 chance currently. Galvin has a lot of weight. He's got 11 stone 11. He was placed in the Gold Cup last year. He's not an old horse. He's still only a 9 year old. But he would prefer if the rain stayed away, and the ground looked quite soft there today. And that combined with a heavy weight and the fact that he's not a tall horse, he's not a robust horse, it might just be a lot of weight for him to carry. So it's a big ask, but I think if Davy Russell could cross the line safe and sound after riding his Grade 1 winner today, it would be a good week. And look, there are so many good stories into this race. You've got Jessica Harrington bidding to win the race for the first time. It's probably the only major race that she's never won. She's conquered the flat world, the jumps world. She's won Gold Cups and Champion Hurdles, but she's never won it, and got lifetime ambition in there. Coco Beach for Harry Cobden, picking up a spare ride for Gordon Elliott. Paul Nichols, of course, he's retained a trainer, has no runner in the race. And then you go a little bit down the way to Michael O'Sullivan after his breakthrough at Cheltenham, having two winners. He's picked up the ride and carefully selected for Willie Mullins. D All Care for Noel Mead, who's never won the race. Joseph O'Brien's got Durasso and a Wave of the Sea in there for JP McManus, the Shark Hanlon. Would there be a better story if he won it with Cape Gentleman? So there's so many different angles to the race, but realistically, at the top 10 maybe in the market, every one of them you could make a strong case for.
I'm back on a Monday with Ruby, so I have to get this out or Ruby wouldn't forgive me. I want to get your thoughts on any second now, Jane, because cancelled, third, second, I mean, if anyone deserves victory for sheer persistence, it must be Ted Walsh and his horse Any Second Now.
Yeah, and you know what? And this isn't because I work with him or I know him. I do think Ted Walsh is a savagely good target trainer in that he doesn't have numerically the same number of horses as, say, Willie Mullins or Gordon Elliott, but the few that he does have, when he picks a race, he can really prime them for that day. And this horse is case in point. He had Papillon, he had Comanche Court, and he got the best out of those horses. This horse has narrowly missed the target on two occasions. The only problem is history is against him. History tells us that an 11-year-old carrying top weight can't win the National unless you're Red Rum, and he's not Red Rum. So his age and his weight are two major factors, but he loves the track and he does come alive when he gets there. And he was very good when he won the Webster Cup last time. He looked like he was as good as ever. So he definitely has an each-way chance, but it would be... History tells us he can't win. Records are there to be broken and all that, but there are probably more likelier types.
You mentioned Red Rum. I believe Red Rum is running on the buildings of Liverpool. There's a hologram, apparently. I only briefly saw this on social media, that you can watch, you can re-watch Red Rum's race now on one of the main buildings in Liverpool. Technology scares me.
So Whitney Houston hologram tour, yeah, and Red Rum around Liverpool.
And Tupac, I think Tupac did a tour as well. I can't believe we got Taylor Swift and Tupac into a Grand National preview. But right, listen, when it's all said and done, who are we going with, Jane? Where's the money going?
I'll give you my selection when Alan Colley must follow up. So just to give you a chance, Alan, I'll tell you why I'm going with Longhouse Poet. He was sixth in the race last year as an 8-year-old, having raced too exuberantly. I think if they can contain his enthusiasm, he will get home a lot better, and I think this has been his target. So it's Longhouse Poet for me. Okay. What's it for Alan Colley?
I'm going with Jane's as well, funny enough.
No,
and I'm going with one other and I'll give you my reasons as well. But funny enough, it's interesting that Jane has picked Longhouse Poet because I fancy that as well. But I wanted to ask Jane as well about a jockey who's in riding now. And obviously we all talk about the Irish jockeys, and obviously for the right reasons. But there's a jockey who's currently racing, and he was brilliant again today, Jane. He's after picking up a spare ride on one of Gordon Elliott's for the National tomorrow. And I think he's the best jockey currently riding at the moment,
Harry Cobden. Yeah, you didn't even have to say his name. It's amazing that he doesn't have a ride in the race, that his connections in the UK didn't have a horse for him. He, over a fence, is as good as any rider riding. He's only 24 years of age, which is incredible for what he's achieved and the pressure that he's under. I think Cocoa Beach has a huge chance. He took to the fences well last year. The rain will have helped. He's still only an 8-year-old and he's a winner last time. He's something like 33-1. He's one of those horses that if somebody wants something at a very big price and they want to have €2 on each way, he'd be the recommendation at bigger prices.
Well, that's where I'm going. And would you agree, Jane, he is probably the best at the moment. I think he's absolutely fantastic. That ride again today on Pick Dory, as you say, the pressure that he's under. And it looks, we've mentioned this around Cheltenham as well, that slowly but surely Paul Nicholls is getting a team together to maybe put up a bit of competition to Willie and Gordon.
Yeah, he's as good as what's in the UK. I won't go forgetting about Paul Townend and
that's
Rachel
a nice political
too quickly.
I haven't before Townend. I'll say it instead, Jane.
Would you?
Yeah, I would.
I disagree with that now, because I don't think he's produced maybe the calibre of a Galopin de Champ or an I Am Maximus ride, but he's a lot younger and he may well do that someday. But he's top class, and I'd imagine when Gordon Elliott realised he was available, he wasn't long about snatching him up.
Well, funny enough, with Gordon Elliott, and it's ironic there you mentioned, I think the closest to Harry, and if he was fit, I think he'd be the best, is Jack.
Jack is ahead of him in my book, but yeah. Look, why, I don't know why our chat has got into ranking jockeys.
Why not? Like, listen, if we can talk about Taylor Swift, we can talk about Anton. Any rogue, I suppose, is the wrong word, but any outlandish each way shouts, I'm sure a lot of Dublin fans will be on Hill 16 and whatnot, but any each way shouts, Jane?
There probably are a few.
Recite a prayer, Willie Mullins, 66.
No chance. I think Capodanno has a nice chance. He was meant to go for the Gold Cup, He missed the Gold Cup for whatever reason. If he takes the fences, he's a great, great chance. What else is worth mentioning is the Liverpool hurdle tomorrow, because Ireland is very well represented in that. That's the 3 mile, basically the stairs hurdle of Aintree, if it was run at Aintree or instead of Cheltenham. You've got Flooring Porter in there, fourth from Cheltenham, fifth from Cheltenham home by the Lee. The winner from Cheltenham, Sire du Burlay, and then you intriguingly throw the mare in there, Marie's Rock. Do you remember this conversation? Nicky Henderson didn't know whether to go for the mares or for the stairs hurdle, and then he eventually went for the mares and they walked, turned into a sprint, it didn't suit her. Now that she's up to 3 miles, it'll be interesting to see if she can beat the boys. But Sire du Burlay, fresh from his win at Cheltenham, I think Flooring Porter will be dangerous. Throw in the likes of a Champ, Dashiell Drasher and Meet and Greet. This is a good race, but I'd love to see... I think I'd like to see the mare full palm 3 miles if she's good enough to beat the boys.
Okay. I'm going to give my useless information here. We're preparing for the 100-year anniversary of Talca Park as a football stadium next year. And on the 100-year anniversary note, there will be symmetry to success for Cape Gentleman, who will be saddled by the charismatic John Shark Hanlon. The 2020 Irish Caesar Witch winner was bought by American Pierre Manigault, whose great-grandfather Stephen Sanford won the Grand National with Sergeant Murphy in 1923, and he wanted a runner to mark the centenary. There you go.
That's the reason.
That's the reason.
It's a good reason, Shane.
Yeah, look, big odds, Jane.
I think he's possibly the biggest of all the odds. He's definitely 125-1, if not 150-1. But in the case of the Ancient Grand National, we've seen, I remember standing there in person when you could hear a pin drop when Mon Mom crossed the line at 100-1, and everybody had to look at the race card to see what was this horse. Nobody had considered him, so it could happen. But I think it's a very good race. I think the fact that there's more novices and younger horses running in it this year leaves it open to horses that could be still ahead of the handicapper. But you can be ahead of the handicapper and not adapt to these fences, and all of a sudden you have no chance. You know, over those first six fences down to Beecher's Brook in that straight line, whether you're in with a shout or not. Also on the same card, you've got a grade one to kick us off. That's the 2 mile novice chase. It looks like it's John Bond's to lose. Banbridge, who won on Thursday, was declared for that, but he's obviously not going to run now. There's a handicap, the second race over 3 miles. Good Time Johnny bids to do the handicap double after winning the pretemps at Cheltenham. The 2.5 mile novices hurdle, you've got Dark Raven against Hermes Allen, who really disappointed for Paul Nicholls in the Ballymore. Throw in Irish Point for Davy Russell and Gordon Elliott, You Wear It Well, who won the Mayor's Novice at Cheltenham. And Let's Be Clear About It for Gavin Cromwell. There is a lot of good racing on tomorrow, aside from the 5:15, the Randock Grand National. But you know, if you get a chance to tune in, this is as good as a jump racing as is around.
Absolutely lots to look forward to. Jane Mangan, thank you very, very much.
Good luck, Jane.
Best luck for
checking in with us. Alan, you're sticking around because we're going to be chatting soccer, two Dublin derbies as I keep alluding to, and a small matter of a bit of a Premier League weekend as well.
Another one for you as well, Shane.
Yeah?
April is the best month for sport. The
April.
Masters, the Grand National, the Crucible.
Oh yeah.
Hit me with a better month.
I can't. Well, I tell you what, I'll think about it, because we've 2 minutes and 6 seconds and I'll get back to you.
RTE 2FM. Game on.
Football.
Now, the League of Ireland Premier Division has a considerably different look after the double round of games in the last week, with Shamrock Rovers now hunting down the leaders as Shelburne visit Tallaght Stadium tonight. The Hoops saw off rivals Bohemians last Friday, issuing a statement of intent that their slow start was merely that. And it followed it up with a routine 3 points against UCD. They can now overtake Derry City this evening on the back of the Candy Stripes, succumbing to two home losses as the worries switch from one team in the title race to another. Both still maintain a 7-point advantage, but there's no doubt Stephen Bradley will expect to see his side close in on top spot sooner rather than later. The number of games tonight is reduced, with Sligo hosting Drogheda and Dundalk's match with Derry delayed because of Joe Biden's visit. Before I get Alan Colley's thoughts, Damien O'Mara is at Tallaght Stadium to set the scene for us.
Game on.
Football.
Known to the purists as the Rings End Derby, tonight taking place in the foothills of the Dublin Mountains. The home side Shamrock Rovers, going in search of a fourth consecutive league win, having made a somewhat sluggish start by their expectations to the league campaign. Their head coach Stephen Bradley bolstered tonight with Gary O'Neill, Aaron Green and Richie Towle, all recovering from an illness which had run through the squad. They're available for selection tonight. Sean Gannon, though, misses out as a result of an injury picked up having come off the bench against UCD last Monday. Plenty of injury concerns for the Shelburne manager Damien Duff, Mark Coyle joining Sean Boyd, Conor Kane and Gavin Molloy on the sidelines. It's the 10th game of the season. By the end of play, each club will have played five of those against Dublin opposition. We're live on RTE2 television kickoff here in Talla at 7:45.
Game on. Football.
So, Alan Colley, it is third against fifth. Shells had a fortuitous victory over Sligo on Monday. I think it's the first time that I can remember a bit of luck falling for Shells at Talca Park. But it's mad looking at the table. I mean, Shells are fifth on 12 points. If they had lost that one, they would be on 9 points, which is second last place Cork City. Rovers obviously can overtake Derry City. It's just, it is extremely tight, even with like going into to round 10. How do you see this one going? I know I'm always pessimistic about Shells, but come on, you can't see anything but a Rovers win, surely.
Come on, Shane. I'm coming off the back of a win on Monday night as well.
A fortuitous win.
Well, I was in Talca as well. I watched a match and... yeah, it was fortuitous, but to be fair to them, I'll give them a bit of credit in the second half that they showed a lot of character and resolve, because at half time I was sitting looking at that table, as you say, they were one down, they were sitting ninth in the table, it was all doom and gloom. I'm sure a bit of pressure would have came on Damien Duff, the manager, but they showed a lot of character in that second half. He made three substitutions at half time and went for it, and they came out, they got an early goal. Matty Smith, who needed a goal badly just to lift his confidence, played really well. He did in the second half off the back of scoring that goal, and then, as you say, they got the fortunate own goal leading to the win. So that gives them huge confidence going into the game tonight. We all know what we'll get out of Shelburne when they go up to Talla, in terms of they'll be disciplined and organised and sit deep. It'll almost be a 5-4-1, try and catch them on the break, and if players capable of catching them on the break, with, as I say, Matty Smith playing so well the other night, Jack Moylan was very, very good as well. So I don't think it's a case of we're going up there and just hoping to come away with maybe a point. I think they're capable of causing Shamrock Rovers problems, but of course Shamrock Rovers, when you flip over the other side of the coin, the form that they've hit in the last probably 10 days, getting that first victory, they've reeled off three in a row in the week, and I watched the game against Bohemians last week and they were absolutely brilliant, Shane. And for all the questions that were raised over Shamrock Rovers' start of the season, they've answered them emphatically. And as I say, to go to Dalymount last week, who were sitting top of the table, all the hype, all the excitement around Bohemians, and they dampened all those spirits in one performance. They were absolutely brilliant, Shamrock Rovers.
You mentioned April as the best month for sport. Do you feel Shamrock Rovers will be looking back at this run in April as the turning point, as this is when they really press on now and just forget about that dodgy, for want of a better word, start of the season?
Yeah, because I think the quality that they have in the squad, Shane, you can see them going on a run of 7, 8, 9 games in a row, and they're already on 3 if they win tonight, as you say. And even though I think Shelburne will put up a good showing, you would have to fancy Shamrock Rovers. But I wouldn't think it's going to be as clear cut as what many people are saying. I think Shelburne will put it up to them. And Shelburne are very hit and miss, as you well know. You look at the 9 games that they've had already, it's actually very it's in fitting what has gone in previous, the past week. They've won 1, drawn 1 and lost 1, and that's been the case for the 9 games. They've won 3, drawn 3 and lost 3. So they're very up and down. I think that'll give them a lot of confidence, Monday night's victory. And they will go there. Damien likes to set out this kind of us against them scenario. So they'll obviously be going there with a bit of a chip on their shoulder, and they'll be sitting back deep trying to ruffle the feathers of Shamrock Rovers. So I don't think it'll be as clear cut as what people are making out. But I just think the form the Shamrock Rovers have hit over the last couple of weeks, it's looking a bit ominous for all the other teams.
It's my job to talk them down, you know, quiet those expectations.
Yeah, well, but you're even talking them down when we're outside as well.
I think injuries really crucifying Shells at the moment. Mark Coyle and Gavin Molloy both missing as well.
And Boyd.
And Sean Boyd, yeah. Needing a number 9 is a big loss. There is another Dublin derby. That one in Talla Stadium features the league's top goal scorers, actually. Shamrock Rovers with 14 goals and the league's joint best defence, Shells, only conceded 5 goals. So as you mentioned, there will be a proper tactical battle on the sideline between Bradley and Duff, as it will on the pitch. You're off to Dalymount Park, Bohemians versus St Pat's Bows, still top of the table, albeit 7 wins, just the 2 losses now. Decky Devine is kind of mentioned that they have the strength and depth. Is that perhaps what we're seeing from Bows, that they have a squad this season, when perhaps in recent seasons they might have just had a team, if you understand my question?
Yeah, 100%, Shane. And I think that's the narrative around Bohemians this year, because you look at the game last week where they were totally outclassed by Shamrock Rovers, and nobody can say any different. They started well for 20 minutes. After that, Shamrock Rovers took over. And for all the talk around Bohemians having such a brilliant start and potential title challengers, I still think if Decky just finishes in the top 3, that'll be success test this year, considering it's his first full season. So you look at the squad that they've assembled, and I think that was clear to see last week. The fact that they got beaten, but to go up to Derry 3 or 4 days later on the Monday night chain, he made 4 or 5 changes. He brought James Clark into the team, James McManus, players on the bench capable of coming in just as good as the first team players, and to get out, come away with the victory away to Derry City, I thought that was a fantastic result, not only for Bohemians and their confidence going forward, I also think for the good of the league as well, because we want to see Bohs up there as long as possible. We want to see Pats, we want to see Derry, we want to see some sort of a title,
a competitive
yeah
title,
absolutely
yeah.
And so far it's been really good in the games, have been competitive, but we mentioned there about Shamrock Rovers capable of winning 7, 8, 9 in a row, and they are. You don't want to see them doing that and running away with a league if all the others are faltering. So we want to see another couple of teams maybe just hanging on to their coattails for as long as possible. So I think that was pivotal last week, that they bounced back straight away, got the Shamrock Rovers game out of their system, went to Derry, a really hard place to go to, Derry as potential title challengers, and to come away with the victory, that's huge. And that's the reason I think they'll beat St. Pat's tonight as well, who were also in very good form. You go back a couple of weeks, everybody was talking about Tim Clancy being under pressure. They got a late equaliser against Shamrock Rovers, Shane. People were suggesting that saved his job. They've gone on and won 3 on the bounce, albeit against teams they'd be expected to beat, but they had a poor start to the season. So they've won 3 on the bounce. So they're coming into the game in good form with plenty of confidence as well. So that's why I'm heading to Dalymount. I think it'll be a really good game, but I'd be just siding towards Bohemians.
Bo's win is going to put the pressure, just briefly, if we fast forward to Sunday, on Derry City, who we will be travelling down south to Dundalk at 3 p.m. on Sunday as well. Can Derry handle that pressure? They need to get an assistant manager in there as well.
Yeah, that was a massive blow losing Alan Reynolds, you're right, Shane, and especially for Rory and the players as well, because of his experience, and we all know how good a coach Alan is as well, or as an assistant manager. So they need to get an assistant manager in, but they need to get a result on the pitch. Obviously two poor defeats. Whatever about losing to Bohs, but losing at home to Drogheda was a really bad one last Friday night. So they'll have to bounce back. They're going to a place, obviously, that's difficult in Oriel Park, but Dundalk are really struggling at the moment, and they've lost 3 on the bounce as well. So Stephen O'Donnell is under a bit of pressure himself to get some sort of a reaction. So it'll be hard to see which way that goes. Derry are a better team away from home, and I always say the reason being because they're playing on grass, but of course Oriel's an astro pitch as well. But
The Astro Derby.
Get rid of those Astros altogether. That's what awesome. I say, Shane. I'm not a fan of those whatsoever. And I think that's the reason that's going to catch Derry out. Like last year, their home form was I wouldn't say poor, but it wasn't as good as what you'd expect a team of their quality to be. And their away form, they picked up 36 points on the road, only 30 at home. And this year, it's the same. They've struggled at home again, and they're much better away from home. So I 100% put it down to that pitch.
Cork defeated Dundalk. Dundalk in 8th place, which is mad to think. Cork 2 points behind them. Just briefly, can UCD get the first win of the season at home to Cork City this evening, or will Cork continue or build on the win from Monday?
Yeah, I think this is big for both teams, more so for Cork, because I think UCD are going to be the whipping boys of the league, as we've all seen so far this season. It's really hard for them, and for Cork just to hang on the coattails of the likes of Dundalk, Drogheda, teams ahead of them, because I think they'll be fighting it out for that second last place, and obviously that goes into the playoff, Shane. So I think it's really important that Cork take this opportunity and beat UCD tonight.
In a word, Sligo Rovers or Drogheda United?
This is hard for me, because I had lunch with Kevin yesterday, and Sligo Rovers are my team. Sligo Rovers.
Sligo Rovers.
I hope Kevin's not listening.
Yeah, okay. We'll edit that out in the podcast, don't worry. That is tomorrow at 7:45. Keith Long is doing a great job with Waterford in the First Division as well, looking to close the gap on Galway. Waterford host Kerry, who are still looking for their first win of the league since their inception. Galway and Bray, it's first against second as well. Bray looking to close the gap on Galway, who are running away with the First Division at the moment. Athlone v Cove, Finn Harps v Treaty, and tomorrow it's Longford v Wexford. We are going to move on to Premier League, but I just do want to read out a bit of news on Athlone Town, because Gordon Brett will take over as Athlone Town's first team manager after Dermot Lennon has stepped away from the role. It was thought that Brett may take a step away from the first team setup as American-based Vallejo FC came into the club as investors. However, after a number of discussions with the new investors, it's said to be confirmed by the Midlanders today that Brett will lead Athlone Town in Division 1 of the League of Ireland this season. Lennon will continue at the club as director of football, working with Athlone's U team pathways, and there is no reference to Portuguese coach Dario Castello, who was in the dugout at the weekend. So
Chaos.
League of Ireland, just the way we like it. Right. Plenty of chaos in the English Premier League as well. First off, I suppose, reflecting on Manchester United last night and throwing the game away, Alan, I suppose, is how you'd sum it up.
Yeah, you would say that, Shane. A 2-0, and even listen to the commentary, I was watching the match, and a 2-0, people were talking about maybe killing the tie off and scoring 3, 4, 5. Sevilla were that bad, and that's how comfortable Man United were in that first half. But for the second half, he made a couple of changes. He was questioned about those changes today, Ten Hag. I can understand maybe the Bruno Fernandes one, because obviously he's going to be suspended next week, and he was afraid he might get a second yellow also, which would have obviously really kind of hurt Man United. Martial hasn't played a lot of football. I could understand that one as well. So I kind of got the substitutions to a point, but they were just so comfortable, Shane, and to let a 2-goal lead slip the way they did, they just lacked a little bit of leadership towards the end of the match. And again, Bruno came off, who you think is the captain and the leader on the team. Harry Maguire obviously was on the pitch, but I think he lacks leadership skills, because not only it's hard enough for him to look after his own performance without worrying about other people's performances as well. Even though he done okay in the match, he was unfortunate with the OG. But I just think to let a 2-goal lead slip in the manner that they did, it just points to the fact of where they're at, Shane, because I watched Man City on Tuesday night, I watched Real Madrid on Wednesday night, and of course that's where Man United are aiming to be, and they're still well off those top teams. And the difference, it's almost a chasm really when you watch the quality of Man City and Bayern, Real Madrid as well. I know they didn't hit the heights in the second half, but I thought Real Madrid were brilliant in the first half. And then I watched that match last night, and even with Sevilla, like, they're well down the league in La Liga, and I just thought there was a real lack of quality from what I watched in those games, albeit it's the Champions League, you'd expect that. But in terms of Man United and where they want to be, even though Ten Hag has done well, there's still a good bit to go, Shane, with that team and that squad.
It will be interesting. Excuse me, Varane as well going off. But if you're clutching at straws, if you're a Man United fan, Lisandro Martinez, everyone's like, oh, disastrous since he's out. Their win percentage with Martinez, 66%. Their win percentage without Martinez, 83%. So there you go. I like clutching at straws. Fergal Brennan, chat to me about the Premier League title race, because Manchester City bang in form, of course, after their 3-0 humbling of Bayern Munich in the Champions League. Leicester City might have that new manager boost with Dean Smith, but new manager boost all you want. This is Man City bang in form, and I fear the Foxes should fear the peaking champions.
Yeah, and it's win or bust, according to Pep Guardiola in his press conference today. And he's made this point a couple of weeks in a row now, that if they lose, and it's more than a wink at Arsenal by saying this, but if they lose, that's it. The title race is over, finished, done, and Arsenal are going to be crowned as champions. He's playing a bit of old-fashioned mind games. He knows the situation. If they lose, it's obviously going to be very difficult, but he knows that they're still in a very strong position. They've got a game in hand, and they've still got to play Arsenal before the end of the season. Obviously, Dean Smith coming into Leicester, from Leicester's perspective, they'll be hoping that that kind of rouses them a little bit. They've still got time to dig themselves out of the situation that they're in. But Guardiola, whilst he's probably saying those things for Mikel Arteta's benefit, he knows it's also the truth himself, because Arsenal have been so good. They've passed pretty much every title test that's been put in front of them. But City need to just keep winning to keep themselves right in there behind them, and put it all on that game against Arsenal later on this month.
Yeah, well, speaking of Arsenal, I do want to pick your brain on whether or not they are succumbing to pressure. But first, we can hear from their manager, Mikel Arteta.
A lot of the players were seen to be very, very upset by that late goal that Liverpool scored. Are you pleased that they're that upset?
Yeah, we should be. When you concede in the last few minutes, you have to be upset, because we wanted to win the game. But then as well, we have to be realistic, and we have to accept that we have an exceptional period in the first half where we should have killed the game. But the reality is, in the second half, we have really tough moments that we have to dig in, and now we should have conceded a few goals as well. So that was the game.
Are you any good at maths?
I'm quite good.
The boffins at Opta have used percentages, wizardry, to work out the possibility of who's, or the probability of who's going to win the Premier League, and they say it's Man City.
Well, when you asked them at the start of the season, for sure it was like this. So nothing has changed.
Alan Colley, any good at maths? I'm glad there was a follow-up there.
It was a strange question, wasn't it? Like, what does that matter?
This is like the XG nonsense and everything else.
But Man City were the favourites at the start. For him to ask Arteta, whoever it was that asked the question, are you good at maths? And then say, because I'm sure, do you think Arteta cares?
Well, I don't know. We've watched the documentary. Worried. He is wild. He probably...
But he's obviously, all he's worried about is his own team, and they've been brilliant so far. I thought last week to be delighted. You may look back at the end of the season and think that point could be a point gained at Anfield rather than actually coming away with losing the three. I know they were in such a strong position, but they were hanging on at the end, Shane, and that could prove pivotal just to get the point. It may not seem like that at the moment because obviously they had the 2-goal lead, but Liverpool put on so much pressure and were brilliant in that second half that point could be huge come the end of the season. But strange question.
Fergal, what do you make of Arsenal? Will they succumb to the pressure, or can they have the mental fortitude to get over the line but firstly win in a London derby on Sunday?
I think so much of it just is going to be lumped on to the game against City, and just looking at the way the schedule pans out, in 11 days Arsenal go away to City, Chelsea at home and Newcastle away. I think they've past this idea of the kind of mental block that they've had in previous seasons. I don't think that exists, or certainly not to nearly the extent that it used to exist. You look at the performance at Anfield last weekend, albeit frustrating for them at the end, and you look at the way they've taken on United, they've taken on City. I don't think it'll be a question of their mentality kind of ebbing away between now and the end of the season. I think it'll be more, is Manchester City's quality just a bit too much? And the whole are you good at maths question there, it is still quite a simple maths question, that if Man City win their game in hand and they beat Arsenal and they carry on winning all of their games, regardless of what Arsenal do, Manchester City will be champions again. So there's a bit of maths thrown into that. There's always maths involved in these things. But I think Arsenal have passed those tests. I think they've answered those questions now. But City are just an absolute winning machine, and Arsenal, cliched as it is, all they can do, concentrate on the game this weekend against West Ham. They'll be confident of winning that. I think they've won 6 in the last 7 against the Hammers, but there's that really demanding little run of games, the crossover between April into May, that will decide the title race.
What is your gut telling you, Fergal, at the moment? Who's going to win the Premier League?
I do still think Arsenal can do it. I think they've got the freshness to keep on doing it, and I don't think they'll be overawed by Manchester City. I just think it keeps coming back to that game where they take on each other. I think Arsenal do have the edge at the moment. Arteta's doing a really good job of managing expectation and managing pressure. I actually think Guardiola's the one trying to make comments and peep over the garden fence to see what Arteta's doing, but it's very, very difficult when you're dealing with someone like Man City. They've got 25 senior international players in their squad. They're pushing for a treble, which would obviously be the first time since 1999. As it stands right now, maybe ask me again in a couple of weeks, but as it stands right now, I do think Arsenal have just got that tiny bit of an edge.
No doubt, I will be asking you in a couple of weeks. Alan Colley, as it stands right now, same question to yourself.
Arsenal, I've said Arsenal all along. I'm still sticking with them, yeah. Fergal mentioned here about the mental block and they've overcome all those kind of questions. Wants to keep Xhaka in tow. He changed the whole dynamic of the game last week. Madness getting involved with Trent, and the whole thing swung on that. So I'm sure he was, obviously Arteta would have had a word with him during the week. But I do think they've been brilliant so far. I think what's key in this as well, and Fergal mentioned it, about the fact that Man City are pushing on all fronts, and that could come a cropper for them towards the end as you hit maybe the semi-final of the Champions League final. Arsenal will be going into every game fresh with a week to prepare as well, so I think that could prove pivotal for them.
Okay, will be interesting to see. Just a note, Manchester United are away to Forest in the other Sunday match, looking to rediscover their form after a bit of a slip midweek. And the Evan Ferguson derby now, I suppose. Chelsea-Brighton, 3 p.m. Of course, Frank Lampard's first ever game in charge as Chelsea manager was in Daily Mount Park, featuring a 14-year-old Evan Ferguson. Before we take a break, we're going to go out the same way we came in, with a bit of Irish football news. Alan Colley, I'm just going to let you tee you up here. You know, the airwaves are yours.
Well, the former, this was my former school boy team, Shane, Merville United. I don't normally do this on air, but Merville United, and we were famous in Sligo Town for winning all before us, but that was the boys. But now to have a lot of girls participating and playing, which is great to see, and there was a big promotional drive back in 2019 to get so many girls involved, and I think there's circa 100 and 110 players involved now since 2019. They're getting ready to go off to Barcelona to play in a tournament in June, so there's a lot of fundraising going on around the area, the local community, trying to support the girls, getting them lots of money obviously for the trip, and they're all heading away in June, as I say. So if there's anyone in the community who wants to support them and help them out, the three girls involved with the coaching is Denise, Aisling and Breida, doing a great job, and Merville will always have a place in my heart, Shane.
Up Merville United, and up Shamrock Rovers, giving shout outs as well. Marie Crowe's eldest son
brilliant.
Is away in Europe as well.
It's the norm now, isn't it, young kids going away on these trips. It's brilliant.
Alan Colley, you're off to Daily Mount Park, so we'll let you go. We're going to be chatting Gaelic football with Brendan Devaney in a few moments' time.
2FM.
Game on.
Gaelic football.
Now, you're very welcome back to the final part of this evening's Game On. Brendan O'Venny joins me now with the chat. Ulster football. Brendan, how are you, sir?
Not too bad, Shane. What about you, lad?
I'm good. Only two matches. All this condensed season and everything else and fixture pile-up, we've only got two matches. There are a host of hurling matches in the Joe McDonagh, Nicky Rackard and Laurie Marr, but we are focusing on Ulster football quarterfinals. Tomorrow it is Fermanagh and Derry throw in at 5 p.m. and on Sunday it is Tyrone and Monaghan. That one throws in at 4 p.m. and that is live on RTE television. Let us start chronologically then, I suppose, and tomorrow with Derry. Rory Gallagher's tried and trusted, still showing the way for Derry. I suppose overall, what have you been most impressed with Derry in the league so far, and can they emulate the successes of last season?
Yeah, Shane, I think they have. They've been growing. I think they've been perfecting what they've been good at. Shane, I've never seen a team drilled to a level that they are at. You know, they committed the last number of seasons under Roy to taking Derry back to the top table. Unlucky last season, they did not get promoted. But this season, you know, was the most consistent, the best team in the league. And, you know, we had that final with Dublin. You know, did their job first half, 4 points, conceded 4-2. Amazingly, in the second half, you know, you would argue that Glasgow maybe affected their ability to boss the middle a bit. Obviously, Chrissy McCaig wasn't there as well. So you had maybe reasons around them conceding goals. But if you're going to learn something, I see, and you want to learn it in the league, so your fear is for Managan in this, and like anybody playing Derry, really, and particularly in Ulster, that they are just going to sit, be absolutely locked tight at the back, and then look to break on you. So listen, I don't think there's any other option in the Fermanagh ranks but to play a similar type game. So as much as you're saying this year, the spotlight is on Ulster, I can't see them being classics by any stretch of the imagination. It's possession football, it's counter-attack play, it's won at all costs, which really is going to kill Lynch's on the pitch. And listen, we'll be lucky if a game breaks out in the second half. That would be my feeling on the two encounters. But I think Derry are showing they're better. Of course, we have the news of McFaul being back, arguably, you know, potentially their best player on a given day. Now, where his fitness is at, it's hard to know. I'm hearing that Chrissy McCaig is still going to be out for the game, but certainly on the bench, you know, likes of Niall O'Donnell, Lachlan Murray, the Downey lads to come in there, Ben McCarron. They have options now, I think, that they maybe weren't showing last year. Of course, a good crop of young players coming through from them. They've had a lot of good years of underage success. So I still think Derry are potentially a team to beat in Ulster.
Chrissy McCaig named at two, Conor Glass, Brendan Rodgers named at 8 and 9, with the teams being distributed to the media on Friday mornings now, but late changes plenty always do come. Just before we move on to Tyrone Monaghan, I suppose, just in a very short sentence, Brendan, can Fermanagh cause an upset, or is it just going to be a case of a Derry win?
Yeah, well, listen, Fermanagh, a brilliant season, won 3 games by a point, so there's probably a bit of a never-say-die attitude in them. They, of course, have 5 new players into their team this year, you know, Shane Lee Cullen in there, Alton Kelm, you know, Shane McGullen in there, and Kieran McManus back. So they have a load of players in there that they didn't have last season. So, you know, Ron O'Neill, of course, ex-Tyrone stars in there coaching them. So they have something about them. Again, bit of an injury, a few injuries for them got into the game. And, of course, the big talisman inside, there's talk of him picking up an injury as well. So, listen, there's potential in there. Listen, Fermanagh just got to stay in there until the closing stages of the game and try and hit them with a late couple of chances and try and open up some goal opportunities. That's how the game's going to play. It's going to play out in that kind of style. So listen, it's going to be tough for them, but Fermanagh are at home. I mean, it's a shot no one's expecting this year, and so listen, they have a chance.
Time is against us, but there hasn't been a lot to choose between Tyrone and Monaghan in their recent championship encounters. I suspect it will be similar come Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, certainly. Listen, again, it's tactics. I mean, Tyrone obviously hammered Monaghan in the league. Monaghan had a couple of players sent off. Listen, Tyrone finished the league well. Still question marks about them. Certainly they have the best squad, you think, potentially. And they have new players into their team as well, always producing footballers coming through. I mean, some of their under-20 All-Irelands coming in, the likes of Rory Canavan, McLennan, Devon Quinn, these fellas coming in. You know, they have Kerr in there as well. Oguz is adding a lot, which is allowing the likes of Kennedy and Fitzpatrick to go inside as target men. Cahill McShane still hasn't come back to his form. But, you know, you've Footballer of the Year McGeary, you've Madley Donnelly having a great season, and, of course, McNamee was back against Armagh in the defence, had a couple of points under the bargain as well. So, listen, Derry are the form team, and you'd have to say are slight favourites to win the Ulster. But I think for squad on squad, I still think Tyrone are the best team in Ulster. But Monaghan are battle-hardened as ever. They're never going to say die. Again, that's going to be an awfully tactical game. But, I mean, I just think the control that Tyrone have and the sprinkling they have going forward, you'd have to give the slight advantage to them mission.
OK, will be interesting to see two tactical battles coming up in Ulster football. Brendan Devaney, thank you very much for taking the call. Sinead, that is all we have time for this evening. Big thanks to Brian Moss and Ronan Lawler for ensuring this evening's show ran smoothly. Enjoy the weekend. I will be back on Monday alongside Ruby Walsh. Do stay tuned to 2FM because Blatney Tracy's up next with the official chart show. But first, we will be checking in with the news desk after this short break.
RTE 2FM.